Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost thing, you know, when you look up in the stadium and you see your mom, you see dad, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
The 0-1 to Duplantis. Hit high and deep to right field. Kerstad on the track near the wall, makes a leap, and it's gone! Three-run home run! Tigers take a lead! 3-2 is Antoine Duplantis. So a pitch he liked. And drives it deep into the bullpen for his ninth home run of the year. And the Tigers, here in the top of the eighth, have their first lead of the ball game. It's 3-2 LSU.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, give us a call. ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We have a tremendous show lined up for you today. We have our good friend from the Lima Time Time podcast. It's been a while. We'll make sure he's awake today.
Don't call it a comeback.
Patrick McClellan, the stand-up comedian and co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, is going to tell us all about the despair that is being a Houston Rockets fan for the fourth time in the past five seasons, being eliminated by the evil empire that is the Golden State Warriors. But hey, the beard dates a Kardashian, so he's got that going for him. We'll give a little hell to Patrick McClellan when he comes on at 7:32. Scott Rabelais, the award-winning columnist from the Baton Rouge Advocate, will join us to lead off the third hour, give us his thoughts on all things LSU. And then we'll have Andrew Jude, just right, from the Saints Happy Hour podcast, 8:32. He joins us every Tuesday. He's going to give us his thoughts on rookie minicamp being in the books, as well as the moves that the Saints made, many undrafted free agents being signed, some that were invited to camp have been given contracts. So we'll get Andrew's insight on that. Plus, we'll recap the Houston Astros win over the Detroit Tigers on the road up there in the Motor City, plus much, much more. Cody Schutz, let's begin the day off, though, finding out, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good. Pretty good. Feeling all right on a Tuesday morning. Ready to rock and roll. Excited about the new golf show. That'll get rocking.
That's right.
In a few hours.
Chip Shots with Rob Spires, former Raging Cajun golfer and current La Triomphe Golf and Country Club pro.
Right. Can't wait. Can't wait for that.
9 o'clock.
So stick around all morning long. No reason to go anywhere. We'll get you through these dull morning hours. Don't worry. But then... I've also, if you can't tell, there's a little extra excitement in my voice, Raymond, because...
You do have an extra dose of energy this morning.
We will get to it eventually, but last night's Firefly Funhouse, Bray Wyatt, best one yet.
And now...
Absolutely incredible.
Now I will
brother.
Have to watch it during the commercial break.
My goodness. My goodness.
Also...
All I have to say is yowie wowie.
Yowie wowie. I'm gonna start implementing that. Just
I know I need that drop. I need that drop.
So we got a lot to get to today. It's gonna be a jam-packed show. Once again, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111.
Would be shame on us, or shame on me, I should say, as an LSU fan, to not say that a little bit of this excitement is also because there's kind of, you know, we're getting some finality here for LSU baseball today with the final midweek game of the season. So, you know, there's no more, you know, after this, it's all big time games. There's no more games that you can look at as an LSU fan and be like, all right, well, if they lose that one, no big deal. This is the last time you get to do that.
And you kind of need to win.
Oh, well, you need to win, but yeah. As an LSU fan, if we lose tonight, I'll be like, all right, now you got to go and you just can't win, can't lose anymore. But, you know, it's the last chance. And so there's always something fun for me about watching the final of something, whether it's just a midweek game or regular season in general, but excited for that too.
That's right. And you can listen to that game tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. The UNO Privateers at the Fighting Tigers of LSU. Pre-game show, 6 o'clock, first pitch, 6:30. So the good brother, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, is going to take you from 4 to 6. He's going to lead you right into LSU pregame for the final midweek game of the regular season for the Tigers. And let's start there. I talked about it on a column that's now has been on the 103.7 The Game blogs. And I also talk about it in the debut of my podcast, Rap Game, which is available now through iTunes, all that good jazz, also on the website.
Sounds familiar.
Yes. I made the point that possibly the win at Arkansas to avoid the sweep can allow the LSU baseball team, the Fighting Tigers, to build up some momentum. They've been fading down the stretch. They had lost 5 straight games. Lose to Ole Miss at home, lose Louisiana Tech at home, go on the road, get beat up a little bit by Arkansas in the first 2 games, and then able to pull off a 3-2 victory on Saturday to avoid the sweep. Here's UNO, your final midweek game. You can now be 6-5 on the year versus in-state opponents. Carry that over. Build up 2 games. I know it sounds crazy that we're talking to LSU in terms of, hey, let's win a couple of games. But that's what they kind of need to do. Beat UNO and then take the series against Auburn. If they can have win 4 or 5, or ideally you want them to win 5 of the past 5 heading into the SEC tournament, at least they have some positive things moving in the right direction. There's been talk that Cole Henry will be ready, maybe not for this weekend, but will be ready for the SEC tournament. They're very hopeful. Eric Walker and Landon Marceau have both pitched better. They haven't pitched great, but they've pitched better. Right? So maybe you can get something going. You got to figure out who the hell is going to pitch on Friday because Mikhail Hilliard has looked not good. Or as Charles would say, terrible. He's looked terrible. It feels like to me that they rushed the young man back.
That's terrible.
That's terrible. Thank you, Chuck. So the Privateers come to town. And once again, this midweek game, whether they lose or win, is not going to help them in the polls. It's not going to help their RPI. It's not going to help them host a regional. If LSU is going to host a regional there in Baton Rouge at Alex Box Stadium, what's going to help them is taking 2 or 3 or sweeping Auburn this week and then winning at least 2 games in the SEC tournament. Hopefully one of those games is an upset of another team, and that would pretty much lock up a regional bid for the Tigers. Right now they're on the outside looking in. Latest projections have them around like 17, 18. Top 16 teams host a regional. But if they take care of Auburn, then win a couple games in the SEC tournament, they're right there. They're right there. So everything's still in front of them, and you'd like tonight's game to be an opportunity to build up some momentum heading into the final regular season series and then obviously the SEC tournament and hopefully the NCAA regional at home. Now, this team is making an NCAA regional. It may not be in Baton Rouge, but they're going to be making the NCAA regional. You can bank on that, just because of where they're ranked. So tonight's game at Alex Box Stadium, once again, pregame right here on 103.7 The Game at 6 o'clock, first pitch 6:30. UNO's unranked. They're 28-24 on the year. This is not one of their better traditionally tough privateers team. They always have a pretty good program. They are coming off a weekend series win. LSU, of course, leads the all-time series with UNO 60-36, including a 14-6 win over the Privateers last season in Baton Rouge. And LSU has won 9 of the past 11 matchups between the schools. But, we've said this before this year, haven't we? We talked about how the traditional series has been overwhelmingly favored LSU versus Louisiana Tech, versus Ole Miss, versus Northwestern State, Southern, McNeese State. You see a pattern. It'd be nice if they could, like, end that pattern tonight. Now, remind you, Maneri played for 2 seasons at UNO back in the day. And back in 1978-79, Cody remembers it well.
Like yesterday.
Not only is that there, that connection between the two schools, which is great. Fourth-year UNO coach Blake Dean played at LSU under Maneri from 2007-10 as an outfielder/first baseman. He was an All-American and helped the Tigers to that 2009 College World Series win. So there's some connections with the coaches between the two programs. It's a nice little storyline. This is what surprises me. UNO is going to throw out the freshman righty, Cortland Ramirez. He's 1-2, ERA of almost 6. 36 innings of work this season. Do you know who's getting the start for LSU? The former closer.
Todd Peterson?
Sophomore right-hander Devin Fondeau.
Dang.
Now, does this mean that Devin's going to pitch more than 3 innings? No. This is Paul Maneri's way of saying my rotation and my pitching staff has arm issues. So I'm going to take my bullpen guy, who I want to help build up a little confidence because it's been rattled of late, and I'm going to have him start the game. He's going to pitch a couple innings, maybe 2.5, 3 innings, and then it's going to be everyone else we don't want to use for the weekend series is going to pitch tonight. That's what that tells me. So you're not going to see Devin Fondeau at all. It's going to be Zach Hess and Todd Peterson for Auburn. And it's going to be everyone else tonight. Don't be surprised if you don't see Chase Costello be out there for an inning of work. That's how it's going to be. There's going to be like 6 or 7 pitchers used tonight for LSU.
I absolutely agree with that. My initial reaction when you say that, because I was unaware up until a minute ago that Devin Fontenot is getting the start tonight. It's Tuesday. Is this weekend series? It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
It's a Thursday, Friday,
They always end like that. Yeah. So it's Tuesday. I could see this happening again if all goes well tonight. For whatever my knee-jerk reaction, I see it in my head, Devin Fontenot starting the Saturday game and throwing 2 innings just to get into that final game of the series. I don't know why. I feel like maybe this is more than Maneri trying to get him some confidence. Could this maybe be Maneri feeling out this starter role or whatever you want to call it, because it's not a closer, but a guy that you know is only going to give you 2-3 max innings, but you put him in innings 1-3 as opposed to, 8 or 9.
You could also be saving one of the guys, maybe Beck or someone else, to start the weekend as well.
Right, because he's been relatively consistent.
Been relatively consistent as well. Fondeau is 4-1 on the year.
He started the season. He was the best pitcher on the team.
And he knows how to win you games. I think it's a combination. I think they're going to pitch six or seven different guys.
Right. Regardless, you'd never see Fontenot for more than into the fourth inning. I don't think you'd ever get there.
For this weekend series on Auburn, Walker and Marceau are definitely givens. I don't know who the third's going to be. It can't be Hilliard.
Todd Peterson said he wants the ball.
Hell, the way he performed the other day, why not? And maybe that's what's going on. Paul Maneri said this, quote, "I love Blake Dean like a son. He played 4 years for us here at LSU, and he gave us everything he had. It's always a difficult game when we play them because you have to put your personal feelings on the shelf. We need to go out there and play a much better game than we have in our most recent midweek games. We're a little thin in our pitching staff, so we'll need to play inspired baseball to make up for that. I'm okay with that. But you better put those feelings aside, and you better want to go out there and crush Blake Dean and the Privateers, because there ain't no time to be playing nice. You may love him like a son, but you need to crush him if you're LSU. Yes!
I must break you.
I must break you. Yes, that needs to be the mentality of LSU tonight at Alex Box Stadium versus UNO. I must break you. So we'll see. Once again, first pitch is at 6:30, pregame 6 o'clock. You can listen to both live right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, a little Raging Cajun baseball talk right here on 103.7 The Game.
Couldn't have drawn up anything any better. And then in the whole thing with Gunner on the mound and in with a strikeout, I think, that was just great for him and great for all our seniors on senior day. So we got good pitching. We only gave up one three-run inning. Of course, it's a five, but I refer to anything from three on up as a three-run inning. And we did give it up, but we were up 16-1. But that giving it up still upsets me. But we were able to pitch for the most part throughout the weekend and stay away from the three-run inning, played good defense. And then the one thing we did, I thought, which was good, was win in different ways.
I wonder if Tony Robichaud is a fan of the Allman Brothers, because I am. I've got another idea for the podcast. Talk about my affinity for the Allman Brothers, man. Sorry, I just could listen to them all day long. I got a little distracted there. You have to reel me in here.
I'm curious. I know that there's just multiple songs named Ramblin' Man. Okay. I think one's a Hank Sr. song, I believe. And that's the one that I'm more akin to. But the Allman Brothers is one of those bands that, at least in my eyes, everyone's heard of, but no one's quite sure what songs they have, at least in my eyes.
Oh, you got Whipping Post?
Oh, tied to the whipping pole.
There you go.
I didn't know that was them.
You got,
see, there
you
go.
Ryder.
Yeah,
Melissa. We can do this all day.
Like Sweet Melissa. That's all the Allman Brothers, really?
That is correct.
Oh, well, I know a lot of their songs then. I mean, we figured this was going to happen. It's not a big surprise.
I mean, you were raised in the South, so that's pretty much a given. The band out of Georgia. So let's get back to
Jethro Tull. Also, big fan. You can work a flute into rock music, I'm all about it. And there's a flute solo in the song Locomotive Breath by Jethro Tull. Check it out. A flute solo.
70s,
you will
man.
Not be disappointed.
The 70s. God bless him. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Little Tony Robichaud clip there talking about the series win versus Georgia State over the weekend. It was a sweep for the Raging Cajuns and a much-needed one. Because now if you look at the standings in the Sun Belt Conference, the Raging Cajuns are now fourth in the West Division, okay? A full few games up on ULM and Arkansas State, so they're no longer in the bottom of the West. Not only that, if you look overall, they now have a total of four teams below them in the overall standings for the Sun Belt Conference. So they're firmly locked in for the Sun Belt Conference tournament, barring some type of absolute train wreck occurring.
Like Ron Washington, Texas Rangers type meltdown.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Against the Warhawks for the three-game set to end the regular season later this week. Because ULM is struggling, and they're going to be fighting for their postseason lives, so UL cannot take them for granted by any stretch of the imagination. So UL, by taking 2 of 3 at Coastal Carolina and then turning around and sweeping Georgia State, the worst team in the Sun Belt Conference, they've now put themselves in position to actually make the conference tournament and head back out to Conway, South Carolina. But they have to take care of business later this week versus the Warhawks of ULM, formerly Northeast Louisiana. This is what Tony had to say, though. There's so many different scenarios how this could all play out. How many games they win, how many games they lose, what other teams do, what their positioning is going to be for the conference tournament, so forth and so forth. Tony says he and his group, they're not concerned about that.
No, because it's not part of our process. Jeff, bless his soul, stopped me in the hallway today to try to tell me the scenario, and I said, talk to the hand. So it was over at that point. So we have to worry about playing baseball for us to be successful. Anytime I think you get off a process and start worrying about a result, I just don't think it's good. And right now, winning's a byproduct of them staying on the process. And that's what we have to really stay on top of is the process. So, you know, some people are saying this is a high you can possibly get, or this is how this can happen or that. I just think we have to go in there and play good baseball and then look up, get in there and plow with the old mule and look up on Saturday and, you know, see where we're at.
Tony gave us an old mule reference. He gave us talk to the hand, which I was not anticipating Tony Robichaud saying talk to the hand. God bless him. You love this man. You should love this man.
Insane in the membrane. Insane. Got no brain.
Every presser is just gold. He tells it like it is. He's a straight shooter, and he just makes all these comparisons that you're not ready for. Every day. Every day.
I want to play for him. It's unfortunate.
You can see why the kids want to play for Tony, but they're not worried about the scenarios. They're just trying to end the regular season strong. The Raging Cajuns, they're ascending here towards the tail end of the season. Can they keep it going later this week, punch their ticket to the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, and then make something happen? Could they make a run? They have some talented pieces. It's just been a consistency issue with the Raging Cajuns this year. Could they be able to do it? Time will tell. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're talking Raging Cajun softball right here on 103.7 The Game.
Win three more. You know, we got to go out there and win three more games.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That's the stadium network. 24 hours of sports. Raging Cajun softball team is headed to Oxford, Mississippi. That's right. Despite being one of the top 10 teams in the country via the polls, the NCAA tournament selection committee said, no, you get to go be the 2 seed at the number 11 national seed host, which is curious. And we talked about on yesterday's show, if I'm Ole Miss, I am not exactly thrilled about what occurred. That a 50-win team, that one of their losses was against Oklahoma, is coming to be taking part in my regional. Path does set up very well for the Raging Cajuns, though. If they can win the Oxford regional and take out the 11 national seed, the winner of that regional plays the winner of the Tucson regional, which features number 6 national seed Arizona. So there is a path to Oklahoma City for the Women's College World Series. For the Raging Cajuns, a team that's won 50 games this year, didn't lose a single Sun Belt Conference game throughout the entire season or conference tournament. And the Raging Cajuns are making their 29th appearance overall in an NCAA tournament, and all coming in the past 30 years. So there has been some people have had their feathers ruffled about the fact that the Cajuns didn't host the regional or that they didn't go and play in Baton Rouge. Everything like that. But Jerry Glasgow and his staff mentality of this team is that they feel like they got what it takes to win any regional, regardless of who the host team is.
You do what the committee says. I've said all along, whatever they say, that's what we'll do. And the beauty of having a good team, you've got a lot of confidence in it. It doesn't really matter as much about the brackets and where you go. I love my team. I've got tremendous confidence in them. And the key factor for us is to get ourselves in position to play a really good ball game and play at a high level here this week in the regional. As far as talent and skill, we've got what it takes to win a regional. So now it's a matter of getting ready mentally, getting ready physically, and then going out and performing.
They are mentally strong enough to go in there and take care of business. Ole Miss is going to have to play their A game. They're not going to be able to kind of cruise control, so to speak, against the Raging Cajuns. This Raging Cajuns team only has four seniors. Lexi Como is one of them. This is what she had to say on heading over and playing in Oxford, Mississippi for the NCAA Regionals.
I feel really excited. I think this is a really good regional, and I think we have a really awesome chance of getting out of it and going to play, I think, the number 6 seed, which is Arizona. So I'm feeling really, really good about it.
Disappointing for Cajun fans, because I know a lot of Raging Cajun fans wanted to see their team play at home, host a regional there in the confines of Lampson Park. Would have been pretty sensational. Atmosphere would have been great. We know that from past experience. But this is a good road team, and they have a good mentality when they're on the road. And Coach Jerry Glasgow talked about it the other day on how his team has performed all season long when they have to be on the road.
We're ready to go on the road. That was a big part of our schedule this year, was to get to where we were a comfortable road team, and we have confidence on the road. If you look at it, we've won a lot of games in a row on the road. We're used to being on the road, and we'll be fine, I think, under adverse circumstances of being on the road.
They know how to win on the road. They're not going to be intimidated by Ole Miss. But the question that I think a lot of people are also asking is, any concern whatsoever of a few things that kind of popped up right down the stretch and in the conference tournament? The one being Summer Ellison, their soon-to-be-named All-American, you can pretty much bank on that, pitcher. She gave up some runs during the conference tournament early, and then she settled down and basically shut down the opposition afterwards. You know, any concerns there? You know, you look at the Sun Belt Conference tournament. They beat Texas State 4-3. They beat Coastal 5-2. Then they beat Coastal again 1-0. So Summer gave up a couple runs there. They were able to overcome it, get back on track. The other thing that possibly is a little intriguing is the lack of runs being scored by the Raging Cajuns. On senior day, it was a 3-2 win over Coastal. Then it was 3-0 over ULM in the opening game of that series. The rest of it got washed out, remember? They didn't play the Saturday doubleheader at the end of the regular season. And then they only scored 4 runs, 5 runs, and then 1 run. This has been a lineup that's been a murderer's row. Lots of home runs, high batting average. Could not playing the 2 games versus ULM, did that throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into their rhythm as a lineup? Is Summer Ellison a little tired? Those are some, I think, valid questions for the team. And I'll talk more about that with head coach Jerry Glasgow later this week. But I do think the game's kind of played a role. Is some are a little tired. I don't know. She didn't look tired in the championship game against Coastal. Did she? You know, she only went out there, pitched 7 innings, only gave up 2 hits, struck out 7. So she looked fresh after a couple of, once again, not terrible starts. She gave up a couple early runs and then shut it down the rest of the way. Championship game, she looked phenomenal as always. She's 37-4 for a reason. Okay? She's the Sun Belt Pitcher of the Year for a reason. More than likely going to be an All-American. I'm not concerned about that because I think that this team has the right mindset. They have this mentality. And look, this is what they've done on the road. They've had to go on the road and play. They played Baylor. They split with Baylor. Baylor was ranked in the top 25. They beat Oregon State, a top 25 team. Lost to Oklahoma. That was in that Oklahoma Courtyard Marriott tournament that the last 2 games got canceled because of ice. That was way back in early March. But they know how to win on the road. They're not going to be intimidated by Ole Miss. They begin play on Friday versus Southeast Missouri. Those are the Red Hawks. 3:30 first pitch there in Oxford, Mississippi this Friday for the Oxford Regional. And then, of course, if UL defeats Southeast Missouri, they'll play the winner of the Ole Miss versus Chattanooga game. So it's the 2-3 seed matchup, plays the winner of the 1-4 seed matchup. Can the Raging Cajuns make a run? Can they do this? Can they make the run that everyone feels like they can? The reason why they're not at home hosting a regional, the reason why they're not playing in a higher-seeded regional is because of the non-conference schedule. It's not their fault that Baylor had some struggles this year. It's not their fault that Oregon State had struggles this year. And that Cal wasn't very good either. And look, the Raging Cajuns Classic and the 33rd Annual Louisiana Classics, both of those are tournaments that they host. You're not going to get a slew of Power 5 conference teams to come into those tournaments. So you have to play, you have to get teams from the Southland Conference, like Texas A&M, Corpus Christi, and Incarnate Word, okay? You have to play the likes of Austin Peay and Stephen F. Austin. Those games didn't help them by any stretch of the imagination for RPI purposes, but they were banking on Baylor, Oregon State, and that Oklahoma tournament of being able to help them with that. Hell, they played Baylor 3 times. They took 2 of 3 from Baylor. They played Baylor 3 times. They essentially played a series against Baylor, the Baylor Bears. They were thinking that Baylor would be better when they made that schedule. They thought Oregon State was going to be better. It didn't happen that way. But maybe those teams struggling like they did and bringing down the Raging Cajuns' RPI maybe helps them. Because once again, the path to Oklahoma City isn't easy. Because it's not easy winning an NCAA regional. It's not easy going on and winning a super regional. But if you're the Raging Cajuns, you much rather would be in this spot right here and taking on a vulnerable team from the SEC who's the number 11 seed overall. It's only a little less than 6 hours away from Lafayette to Oxford, so you're going to have some of the diehard fan base, those people that wear the vermilion white, bleed it, love saying go Cajuns. Okay, they will make the trip up to Oxford. So they'll have fans in attendance cheering them on. You can win this regional, and then you set up an opportunity for you to win the region, the winner of the Tucson regional, which you assume is going to be Arizona, but maybe it won't. Regardless, you get to avoid Oklahoma and like UCLA and Alabama in the regional round and in the super regional round. And that path to get to Oklahoma City is right there in front of you. This team's playing with a lot of confidence. It hasn't lost a game in, hell, I don't, when's the last time the Raging Cajuns even lost a game? The last time the softball program lost a game was back on March 20th. That extra inning, 11-inning affair to McNeese State, 5-4. They've won every game since then.
It's almost two full months, calendar months.
Two full calendar months. They got a chip on their shoulder. They're determined. They're playing for Jerry's daughter, who tragically died before the start of the season. They feel like they're being disrespected. They got a lot of things that they can play for that they're going to use as fuel once they get into Oxford this weekend. See if the Raging Cajuns can pull off the quote-unquote upset and win the Oxford Regional this weekend. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the first hour right here on 103.7 The Game.
The number one pick in the 2018 NBA Draft goes to the Phoenix Suns.
Who is going to win the lottery?
Could we hear a repeat of that this year?
Oh, Phoenix is awful, yes.
They got a good shot.
They're tied. They're tied with two other teams. The Suns. Yeah, everyone knocking Monty Williams for taking that Phoenix Suns job over the Lakers. I don't know, man. They got two nice pieces with Aiden and who's the kid out of Kentucky that's the point guard for them. He's now a two-year guy. He just wrapped up his second season. His name escapes me.
Phoenix could be the new Philly. Trust the process.
Oh,
and Phoenix.
Trust the process. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. That's right. Tonight is NBA draft lottery time. Of course, the four-letter network will be broadcasting it live because why wouldn't you?
It's in Chi-Town.
What?
Yeah, man. Chicago getting the love.
14 teams. Once again, just a refresher for people that don't understand the draft lottery and go, what? Lottery? They just don't draft people?
Right.
No. The NBA is like, nah, we're going to do something odd. So the 14 teams that did not make the postseason are eligible for the lottery. Okay. So here are their odds under the new format, because they changed the format. They voted on it in 2017, where the revamped format levels the odds at the top of the draft lottery so that teams with the three worst regular season records all each have a 14% chance of winning the lottery. And in the pre-2019 structure, the top seed had a 25% chance, second seed 19.9, 15.6. You see how this works. So it's kind of staggered like that. So your teams that have the best opportunity of having the ping pong ball go their way and them being awarded the number one overall pick, which will be, of course, Zion Williamson out of Duke, are the New York Knicks, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Phoenix Suns. Followed behind that is the host city Chicago Bulls at 12.5%, the Atlanta Hawks, because of course they're awful, 10.5%, followed by the Washington Wizards at 9%, and then there is New Orleans tied with Memphis and Dallas at 6%. The likelihood that the New Orleans Pelicans and new Vice President of Basketball Operations, David Griffin, will win the NBA draft lottery is almost slim to none. The fact that they'll even get a top three pick is slim to none. But why this is important for you Pels fans is this. You're going to get yourself a lottery pick, and you'll get a good player there. But, here's the but. You really want the New York Knicks to win the draft lottery tonight. You know why? Because that's a scenario where you can trade Anthony Davis to the New York Knicks and get the number one overall pick in return. Because that's what he's worth. and not many teams can give up anything. The Lakers have a 2% chance of winning the NBA lottery. Okay, they're not in the mix.
So you're telling me there's a chance
where the Pels could keep their lottery pick. Maybe it's a top 10 pick. And you get the number one overall pick where you can take Zion Williamson. So then you can have two picks in the top 10 and surround that with Drew Holiday and other pieces that you can have. That's not a bad team. It's a great young team. So you want to actually pull, if it's not the Pels breaking the NBA lottery odds by getting the number one overall pick. Because remember, when they got Anthony Davis, they were not the odds-on favorite to win the lottery that year. Now, they had a better chance that year than they do now.
Right, they also weren't the Pelicans.
That's right. They were still the Boy, but you know what it feels like to me? And I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade today. Because the city of New York, Madison Square Garden, man, they want that number one overall pick. They want something to cheer. You know, they don't believe that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving or whoever else is going to be coming to the Knicks. They don't believe that Anthony Davis is going to be traded here. The Knicks want it. Cleveland, they're terrible again without LeBron James. They could use a new face of the franchise. But why does it feel to me that the Phoenix Suns are going to be the ones that didn't get the number one overall pick?
Back to back.
And if they're back to back, they're not going to take Zion. Because they already got DeAndre Ayton.
They're going to take Zion.
They'll probably take
him. They'll take him and trade him at the very least.
So, NBA draft lotteries tonight. So we'll find out what the lottery order is going to be for the NBA draft later this summer. And we'll find out.
Oh, Pels. Papa needs a new pair of shoes.
If the Pels can pull it out or if the New York Knicks can win the lottery. Those are your two scenarios if you're a Pels fan. That's what you want to happen. First hour's in the books. Western Conference Finals preview coming up here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Seeing both kids play in the NBA playoffs and then to see them play against each other, they're like the royal family of the NBA. It's incredible. There they are, and Steph and Seth both having all this success. And as parents, they must be having the time of their lives. And actually, I know they are because I've talked to them about it.
Welcome to Hour 2 of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111. We start off today's show giving you a preview of LSU versus UNO, final midweek game of the regular season. Can LSU win the game? They're starting Devin Fontenot on the bump, so that tells you their approach to the pitching staff today. Can they get that win, final midweek win, build up some momentum heading into the Auburn series Thursday through Saturday, and kind of be on a little bit of some rhythm and a little bit of a roll heading into the SEC tournament? If they can do that, win a couple of games, they could very well still host an NCAA regional. By the way, reminder, you can listen to LSU pregame versus UNO as well as first pitch right here live on 103.7 The Game. Pregame at 6, first pitch at 6:30 tonight. We also talked about Raging Cajun's baseball. how they've won back-to-back weekend series. They're now firmly entrenched in the top 10 in the Sun Belt standings. Tony Robichaud's bunch is not concerned about any type of scenarios or where they're going to land or what they're going to do. They're just going to go out there and focus on winning ball games. They play at ULM to wrap up the regular season. And we also touched on the Raging Cajuns softball team. Obviously disappointing for the fans, having to drive nearly 6 hours to Oxford, Mississippi to see their team play, despite the Raging Cajuns winning 50 games and being ranked in the top 10. They have to be a 2 seed at the number 11 seed regional host. But that allows them to have an easier path to get to Oklahoma City for the Women's College World Series, and that's the ultimate goal. And then we also touched on the draft lottery and how the Pelicans, best case scenario tonight when the NBA draft lottery occurs, that the Pels somehow break the odds and claim the top spot in the NBA draft by winning the lottery, or the New York Knicks do so, and that way David Griffin and the New Orleans Pelicans can trade AD to New York City, to the Knicks, and get the top overall pick in return for their perennial all-star and MVP candidate that they want to trade. But we're going to keep that NBA talk going on right now. You heard Steve Kerr there discuss NBA royalty, the Currys. Dad was Dell. He was a good player. One of his sons is better than him. The other one is a good NBA player. So it'll be Curry versus Curry in the Western Conference Finals, which begins tonight. Golden State Warriors, the two-time defending champs, winners of three of the last four NBA world titles, are taking on the surprise team in the Western Conference, the Portland Trailblazers. That's best of seven series begins tonight. The big storyline, as we know, Kevin Durant will not be taking the court today, tonight rather, for game one of this series because of the calf injury. He's more than likely going to miss games two, and there's some reports that he could miss all the way. He won't be able to return until possibly game three or four, depending on how the rehab goes. So no KD, the back-to-back NBA Finals MVP and a former league MVP, and arguably the best player on the planet. LeBron fell off a little bit this year. It's KD, LeBron, and then I would probably say James Harden and the Greek Freak are in that next tier. So no KD, but that didn't matter in the series versus the Houston Rockets, did it? KD gets hurt in game five. The Rockets still find a way to lose that game. Can't beat the Warriors. No KD to go in game six. At home in Houston, Beyonce's in attendance. The actress who plays the character on Game of Thrones that loves the dragons is in attendance. Emilia Clarke, I do believe, is the actress's name.
I think you're right.
She was in the Han Solo movie. I know that.
The blonde hair. In Game of Thrones.
In Game of Thrones, yes. And she loves dragons. And apparently...
She tried to give a dragon to a guy one time. And the guy was mean to her, and then the dragon melted said guy.
So your Game of Thrones.
I know, it was a gif. It was something. Oh. It was like a meme gif, because it was like when your girlfriend gets mad at you, and then it was the gif of her like dragon, and it melted that guy.
Nice, bravo. She was in attendance. You had the star power.
Was Aquaman in Game of Thrones ever?
Yes,
I thought so.
He was on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Even though I don't watch Game of Thrones, I know he was on Game of Thrones.
Right.
Because I read.
Jason Momoa.
That's right. You have all the celebrities in attendance. And it still didn't matter. It still did not matter for the Rockets. The Warriors still found a way. You had all that star power, no Kevin Durant for the Warriors, and you hold Steph Curry to 0 points at halftime, and you still lose because Steph Curry said, I'm taking over. I'm a former league MVP. I'm the best three-point shooter in the history of the game. I'm going to score 33 points in the second half and embarrass you, Houston. And that's exactly what occurred. So no KD, that's the big storyline, but I am pumped. Even if KD was healthy for this Western Conference Finals. Oh, this is such a good backcourt battle. Curry and Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers versus Dame Lillard and C.J. McCollum. C.J. McCollum has become the most under-the-radar great player in this league, not named Drew Holiday. Shout out to the Pels. Dame Lillard is underrated, and he just makes big shots like the 37-footer to eliminate the Oklahoma City Thunder in the opening round, where he had that great photo and he just looks. It's like, what's up? I'm the man being mobbed. These guys are going to get after each other. I'm intrigued to see what the defensive matchup is going to be. Are they going to switch over and let the guys guard one another? Are they going to switch off and let? So I'm interested to see if this is going to be one-on-one basketball. I don't know. I am pumped, though, about this backcourt battle between these two teams because this is going to be something to watch. Question I have is depth for both squads. Without Kevin Durant, you're going to have Andre Iguodala is going to be pushed into the starting lineup now. Iggy's a little old, okay? Look, the Warriors were great in the Game 6 win over Houston. The bench came up big. But the Warriors have guys like Quinn Cook, Alphonso McKinney, I love Sean Livingston, and Jonas Jerebko. Can you count on any of those guys to step up? I don't know. And then we have to figure out, what about Rodney Hood's injury? He hyperextended his knee in the Game 7 win over Denver, who was the 2 seed. Now, reports are that Rodney Hood, a player I felt the Pelicans should have signed last offseason, I said it here on the radio, may not be out for long, but that will affect their depth. So we'll see if depth will come back and bite the Golden State Warriors in the rear behind. Cody Schuch, you have a question.
Hopefully,
you have a statement.
Yeah, I can help you with a little something. This is confusing. Hold on. Steph Curry was actually asked about the whole, will he be playing one-on-one against Seth? And listen, and I found some sound.
Okay.
He's beat me before. I just don't remember when the first one was. Like, there wasn't like a mark this day on the calendar type of day. It was just, I don't know. Maybe he has the answer. Yeah, I probably might have blocked it out of my memory.
So we now have precedent for Seth Curry taking down Steph Curry one-on-one.
I will be interested to see how much time they actually spend playing each other because Seth is a backup. So he's one of the backup players on that backcourt. So when Dame and CJ need a breather, Seth Curry comes in.
Those are important minutes.
Those are important minutes. So I don't know if you're like your Golden State, you know, part of me feels like Steve Kerr's like, yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. So no, Steph, I want you to stay out there. I want you to stay out there or rotate, you know, have, you know, Sean Livingston be out there and then have Steph on his brother.
I think they should follow each other around the court. Personally, I think they should. You know, it should just be one-on-one. We'll just play half court. Half court, game one of the Western Conference Finals. Just a half court game between the Curry brothers. First to 30 wins.
We'll also be interested to see if Steph gets to play against his brother because he's had foul trouble all postseason. The former league MVP. Three-point extraordinaire. He's gotten into foul trouble a lot. He slaps. He gets very aggressive trying to compete in situations in the midcourt. I love the tenacity of not wanting to give up buckets, but with KD out for at least probably the first two games, if not three, can you afford to have Steph Curry get into foul trouble? Because then you're taking away just yet another weapon from the Golden State Warriors. Blazers also have the big fellas, Enes Kanter. That's an advantage for Portland because they got Enes Kanter down there. He's going to go against the likes of Kevin Looney and Andrew Bogut.
Is though here?
Yes, Andrew Bogut, who was not in the league and was signed during the postseason.
Here we are, Western Conference Finals again. The Golden State Warriors are there again. Are the Portland Trailblazers really the team that's going to dethrone Golden State in the Western? Is that, you know, of all the teams we thought, because eventually Golden State can't win forever. So, you know, eventually they're going to start to lose. No. But is Portland really the team we think that's going to dethrone them?
No. The Durant's injury and Steph's foul trouble gives them a shot to dethrone them. And the way McCollum has been playing all postseason, because remember, it was Dame in the opening round versus Oklahoma City Thunder. He just outplayed Russell Westbrook and embarrassed him. He always plays great against Westbrook. The next series, Denver starts D-ing up on Dame, taking him out of the game. Well, McCollum steps up. So this is a great backcourt battle. I expect this to be high scoring. I expect this to be high scoring with the two backcourts that are going after each other. But with Durant being out, and they kind of take out the ISO ball, so to speak, because when you have Kevin Durant, you're going to play a little bit more isolation on offense. I think it's going to be more up-tempo. But the Durant's injury does give them a chance. But if Portland wants to even make this a six-game series, Dame Lillard and McCollum are going to have to play absolutely out of their mind. They're going to have to outplay Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. They're going to have to outplay the Splash Brothers. So far this postseason, they've played an extremely high level, Dame and CJ. But can they do that for 6 to 7 games against the Golden State Warriors? And does Portland have anyone on their team that is as intense, as aggressive, and as just a guy who changes the game on the dime that like Draymond Green does? Does Portland have that cat? I don't think they do. Draymond Green could play a huge role in this series. So we'll see. Western Conference Finals begin tonight. Golden State Warriors versus the Portland Trail Blazers. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Houston Astros, they just keep winning ball games. We'll talk about the Stros right here on 103.7 The Game.
Here's the pitch. Drives this one. Left center field. Going back on it, Stewart. He looks up, and that's gone! Jake Marisnyk, a two-run shot to left center. And the Astros now lead 5-1 on that blast from Marisnyk, his fourth of the season.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That's the Stadium Sports Network. Houston Astros have now won 6 in a row after Monday night's whooping on the road in the Motor City, 8-1 over the Detroit Tigers. They scored the majority of those runs off of home runs. Houston got home runs from its number 6, number 8, and number 9 hitters before Bregman, the former LSU star, added his 13th of the year. The Astros scored 3 runs in a 3-batter span in the second inning, then added 2 more in the 7th and 3 in the 9th. That's what George Springer had to say afterwards, Mr. Springer Dinger himself. It's nice to see production top to bottom. They pick up the top of the lineup when the top of the lineup doesn't do its job. Just teed off on a pretty good pitcher. Matthew Boyd had a very good start to the season, but he didn't last very long. He was not ready for what Houston Astros brought to the table.
Wasn't ready for this jelly.
Oh, he was not ready for this jelly. The Tigers lefty gave up 2 of the home runs in the game. and he yielded 3 runs and 5 hits and threw 96 pitches. He got tagged with the loss. He's now 4-3 on the season. Brad Peacock, meanwhile, for the Houston Astros, had a good outing. He only allowed the 1 run on 3 hits and 5 innings of work for the Stros. And Houston, in addition of winning 6 straight games, has now won 9 of its last 10. This is what Boyd had to say about Houston's lineup. Quote, "My stuff was working, but they have a really good approach. They are patient and they don't chase, so you have to be in the zone against them. This is a starting pitcher that says, my stuff was working, but they just have a really good approach. He's telling you that he had good stuff and that he did his job, and it did not matter. Because the bottom of the Houston Astros lineup still was able to tee off on him and hit home runs like it was batting practice. I've said it before. The best lineup in all of baseball resides in Houston, Texas. The best lineup. The questions for me, for the Astros, is avoiding the injury bug. As we know, Jose Altuve, the former American League MVP and World Series hero, is on the IL right now. They dealt with injury issues last year with Altuve and, of course, with Carlos Carrera. If they can stay healthy, not a better lineup in all of Major League Baseball. The pitching, you got Verlander. You got Gerrit Cole. Is it Peacock, your number 3? They got some question marks there. That will play itself out. They will be able to figure that out as the season progresses. Don't be surprised if you see the Houston Astros make some type of move, maybe for a middle reliever, or possibly if there is another starting pitcher there on the market during the trade deadline, if they don't have to give up a ton. Because their window is now. Their window is now. Mr. Kate Upton is not getting any younger, and he's the ace of your staff, so you may want to solidify that. But tremendous win for the Stros. Once again, they've won 9 of their last 10 games now. 6 in a row.
You want to take a wild guess at the Astros are 27-15 overall on the season, okay?
All right.
Want to take a wild guess how many games in first place they are?
So, give me their overall record again.
27-15, and they are in first place. But by how many games would you guess?
6.
6.5 games in the first place. Well done, Raymundo. Almost on the money.
Oh, shot in the dark works sometimes.
They're 6.5 ahead of the Angels, 7 ahead of the April champion Seattle Mariners. So what happened there, guys?
Remember when the Seattle Mariners were supposed to be good?
They're under 500 now, by the way. 21-23 is Seattle. I'm trying to do a quick check. That looks to me like it may be, and it is by percentage-wise, it is the best record in Major League Baseball. The Astros have a 643 win percentage, and the second-place team has a 632 win percentage. I'll give you one shot at who's got that 632 win percentage, Raymond.
I have no idea.
The Chicago Cubs.
Oh.
Best team in the National League. Second best team in all of baseball, the Cubbies. So look out. Speaking of the Cubbies, PC Rec Cubbies, after a rainout, we were washed out last week. We'll be back in action on Thursday.
That's right. All of our peeps in point.
Waiting with bated breath. But yes, the Astros, best record in baseball. Cubs, for what it's worth, second best.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very happy.
I can tell. You're very happy. You're very ecstatic. Stros get back on the diamond tonight. Game 2 of that series at Detroit. You can listen to it live on our sister station, KVOL, the Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, right here in Lafayette, or 104.1 in Lake Charles. That'll be starting at 5:30 tonight if you want to check out the Astros versus the Tigers. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll be talking with Patrick McClellan, stand-up comic, co-host of the Lima Time podcast. We're going to talk Astros, and we're going to have him explain to us why the analytics-driven Houston Rockets, once again, failed to bring home even a conference championship. So, I'm sure he'll be salty about that. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That's the Stadium Sports Network. Talk a little Houston Astros baseball before the break. They've now won six in a row, nine of their last 10. They're the best team in all of Major League Baseball, and they have the best lineup by far. So we're going to talk a little bit more Houston Astros baseball, as well as Houston Rockets, yet another early playoff exit for them, with our next guest. He's a stand-up comedian and the co-host of the Lima Time podcast, the one and only, our good friend, our old friend, Patrick McClellan. Patrick, how are you this morning, brother?
Terrible. Early. I'm fine. I was going to pretend like I was mad. I'm not mad. I'm fine. What's up?
So, it's been a few days, man. You've had some time to recover. How does it feel to, once again, have the Maury's analytics and James Harden's beard not get it done in the postseason?
Feels like another year. Houston Rockets basketball, one-on-one. It feels the same.
How?
The same stuff.
How's it going to change? I think, a legitimate question. You have one of the best scorers in NBA history on your roster. I know Chris Paul is old, and that contract is going to kind of kill you guys. But you can't get over Golden State. You had everything there. What piece is missing? I mean, do you need a jump shooter? Yeah, you thought you had that with Carmelo, and that didn't work out.
Oh, that's jeez. I think he's the reason we were cursed. We were cursed from just even thinking about bringing him in. So that's where it started. I mean, this Rocket team was good enough to beat the Warriors. It's frustrating that they just can't play to their potential. That series was a microcosm for the whole year. You don't know what team you're going to get on a day in and day out basis, and you don't know where the other points are going to come from. So it's frustrating that the pieces were seemingly there, but they couldn't get it done. Eric Gordon was never quite enough. There's a couple of ways they could get it done. The only option for other new players is packaging Capella in a deal. Maybe go after Anthony Davis that last year on a contract, on a package deal. Maybe. That's just throwing that out there.
I hear the Pelicans are in the market of trading away Anthony Davis. That's at least a rumor.
I think I read that on the dark web. It's very secret. I don't want to put it out there too much.
The dark web. Let me ask you this, Patrick. Boy, it sure does feel like you got the guards and you're great there, but I understand that Houston's a guard-oriented team, and that's the kind of thing that Maury wants to run, and that's the thing that D'Antoni wants to run with. But if I'm looking at champions in recent history, I see Draymond Green for the Warriors, and then they added Durant. I see LeBron James played with Kevin Love and also played with Chris Bosh. I saw the Spurs had Kawhi Leonard and Tim Duncan. I see a lot of versatile wing players that are winning championships. Is that the missing piece for the Houston Rockets?
No, I think a scorer, a high point scorer, somebody like what Eric Gordon was supposed to be, that would have been the difference. I don't know if I'm in the minority, but Clint Capella is still a project. I think Clint Capella turns into a great player. He's got to get his hands better and high point the ball better and get some toughness. So I think it's possible that if he's in the plan, that he becomes that piece. But he was just terrible in some spots during that series, and he was also great in some, where you see what the potential that he could have. But yeah, it's not good. P.J. Tucker is the toughness. It's toughness is what they're missing, and that's what Harden was alluding to at the press conference, saying he knows how to fix it. It's toughness.
But you can't buy toughness, right? I mean, that's something that you either have or you don't. And
well, you can create a culture. You've got Chris Paul there, who's he's a bully. And is a guy you like having on your team, but he harps at players and he gets people in line. PJ Tucker's the same kind of guy. And James is kind of, he's not demonstrative, but he definitely holds players accountable. So I think there were some toughness issues, and when their backs were against the wall going down there, they couldn't get it done. And I do think that they could have beat the Warriors, and it was right there for them to take a shot at the championship, and they just squandered it. So, we'll see. DeAndre Jordan would be somebody I wouldn't mind them going after.
So you think they could easily – I mean, my bigger thing is for the Houston – and we're talking with Patrick McClellan of the Lima Time podcast. He's also a very talented stand-up comedian, diehard Houston sports fan. I think Clint Capella has some potential, but when I look at the list of the championship front courts – I see a lot of really prolific scorers: Durant, LeBron, Dirk, even Gasol, Garnett. I mean, you go back. Rockets don't have that, and I don't know if Clint Capella can be that. But
no,
also,
he will never be that.
Right. He'll never be that. But also, does a prolific scorer in the front court really fit into D'Antoni's offense?
No, I mean, could they make it work? Absolutely. I'd argue that I would rather just maybe not have D'Antoni. I think he's an absolutely awful playoff coach. He's not built for the way the game changes. He's great for the regular season, great for running around, but there's no off-the-ball plays or dead-ball plays. It's just he's not he doesn't put the toughness in the team. I'm not a big D'Antoni guy during the playoffs, especially in a series like that where they're punching each other in the face. It's just not a big fan.
And that was the same thing with him when he had all the success in Phoenix, right? That was the other thing.
Yeah, that's his whole thing, and that's what it's always been. And they fall in love with those high point totals in the regular seasons. And but when it comes down to the refs start tightening up in the playoffs, and they call stuff they don't call in the regular season, and it's a different game in the playoffs. It just is, and D'Antoni doesn't seem to adjust at all. So, I don't know.
We're talking with Patrick McClellan from the Lima Time podcast here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Patrick, what is more egregious, losing to the Golden State Warriors for the fourth time in the past five seasons or losing while Beyonce is in the house for the game?
You should never lose in front of the queen. I was more upset with the Mother of Dragons was there.
The Mother of Dragons was in the house. That's right.
Yeah, that's where we were cursed by her. I feel like we were in her wrath. So I don't know. It's all egregious. I'm not one of the people that wants the Warriors to disband. I want to beat them. I like that they're a good heel. They're a perfect villain. It's good for the league. I would love
an evil empire is good for the league. You're right. It's good to have.
It is.
Right.
It is. And they are great. Like, it's not like they're so fun to watch. They're so good, but they're legitimately great. Like, I want to beat them. And, and nobody has an answer for it. We'll see. But yeah, I'd like to beat them. I think they're right on the precipice of being able to do it. And they just, haven't been quite able to do it. I last year they had a real good shot and Chris got injured. So I don't know. Maybe they'll just beat us for the rest of my life and it'll just be what it is.
It'll just be what it is. Patrick, I know obviously your team is eliminated, so it's going to be kind of bittersweet. Do you give the Trailblazers any shot in hell of beating the Golden State Warriors in a seven-game series?
No. No, and I like watching the Trailblazers. They're fun. They're a fun team. No way. That series is over in five.
Even with KD on the bench nursing the calf injury.
Yes. They're just playing the team that won 73 games. even with KD on the bench, Steph and Clay will step up, and they can adjust like that. They'll be fine. So, yeah, they'll win in five.
Let's go over. We're talking with Patrick McClellan of the Lima Time podcast here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Patrick, over the Eastern Conference, I'm intrigued by this matchup. I think it could be a very good series. You get the Greek Freak who's playing at a different level, and then you got Kawhi Leonard who just made a shot for the ages. And he is, this is a guy that already has a world championship under his belt. I know it's not maybe as sexy as anything with the Golden State Warriors, but Milwaukee and Toronto, I just can't believe I just said Milwaukee and Toronto as something to watch. But here we are, Bucks, Raptors, who do you like and what do you think the key is going to be to that series over in the Eastern Conference Finals?
I'm glad that the two best teams, at least in my opinion, I think record-wise they were, but those are the two, that's the class of the East. I've gone back and forth. I don't trust Toronto in the playoffs. They're going to squander this somehow, I feel like. But they're legitimately good. And I think the Milwaukee Bucks are, I think they're an absolute beast. I wouldn't be surprised if they won the championship. I know that's not some going out on a limb or anything. They're the best team in the NBA. But they can beat the Warriors the way they run, the way they shoot. I think the Bucks win. It may go seven. But I think the Bucks win the Eastern Conference, and I think that I'm gonna take the Bucks to win the championship.
So you got Milwaukee coming out of the East facing the Warriors, and you like Milwaukee.
I do.
How surprised?
Yeah, this is the way they play. That's the only Milwaukee's. They're good enough to beat anybody. I think that they can absolutely beat the Warriors.
How surprised are you that the Greek freak that Giannis has developed into the type of player that he has?
I'm not surprised because he's the Greek freak. You don't get that name without being a freak that's also Greek. It's the way he carries himself, and he has a legitimate want to be great, not just a good player. Like, he wants to be the best, and he means it. So he clearly works hard. But that was a meteoric rise from being a guy that was kind of on the watch list of being the class of the league. He's fun to watch, and they've got a bunch of pieces around him. That Milwaukee team, they're fun. Good for them. Good for the Milwaukee, the people of Milwaukee. Finally something.
That's right. There's more to Milwaukee than beer and cheese and Laverne and Shirley. They got the Bucks again being good, so good for them. Now,
yeah, for sure.
Patrick. Your Strohs.
Winners. Yeah, that was the good stuff. That was,
there we go. There we go, brother. Nine of their last 10, they've won six in a row. Even with Altuve on the IL, formerly known as the DL, they're just so good. They had the bottom of the lineup hitting home runs off a pretty good starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. They have the best record in the big leagues. Tell me about your Strohs. How excited are you about the way they're playing as of right now?
Yeah, they're really fun to watch right now. I'm already starting to get tired of saying this, but they're the class of the league. They're deeper than everybody. They're better top to bottom. They're gonna have the best record in the league, and they're gonna have a chance to win a World Series. I don't see any reason why they can't. But I think they're gonna make a run at the 2001 Mariners because of how terrible the division is. This is going to be over by the end of May. They can start resting guys. I mean, they're just that much better than everybody else.
You just said they're going to start resting guys. It'll be over by the end of this month.
Yes, no,
they're just going to start resting guys.
I'm dead serious. Well, that's going to be Hinch's job is going to be to keep people healthy, but still fresh for October, because it is going to be over. I mean, there's no other team at 500 in the division right now, and it's only going to get worse. And it's going to be wrapped up, so they're just going to keep people from getting hurt, because that's the only way that they can, hurt their chances. So I don't know,
Patrick.
They're very good. That's my hot take.
They're very good. That's your hot take. Whew, that's burning up. That's burning up. Burning up.
I know.
Burning up the airwaves.
I'm already getting emails about it.
We're talking with Patrick McClellan of the Lima Type Time podcast, joining us here on the Arco Equipment Hotline, Patrick. Lineup is filthy, absolute, just pure filth. Rotations, you got your top two guys for sure, right? Verlander and then Gerrit Cole is a really good number two. McHugh started off the season very good, first four starts, kind of got derailed a little bit in his next four, and now he's in the bullpen. Do you like that move, moving McHugh to the bullpen, and how do you feel about the guys pitching in the 3, 4, 5 spots for your team?
I kind of feel bad for him because I know Colin wanted to get back into the rotation, and he's earned it. He's just a team guy. But he was, elite out of the bullpen last year, and I think that's part of the reason why he's headed back there. They just know that's a spot where he can be an anchor. But he's in a contract year, and I just for him, it's a personal thing. I kind of wanted him to get more of a shot than that. He was terrible the last four starts, but I don't. That didn't seem like a very fair amount of time, unless it was just something that they'd already discussed. So I don't know what the deal is with that, but he's going to put his head down. He's going to be a great out of the bullpen. So I hope for the best for him. He's always been good, so I'm not worried about Colin McHugh. Then you had Corbin Martin come and look absolutely dominant. That's got to scare the rest of the league as well, that we have prospects that are coming up there that are also great, that are just going to fill in places, and it's going to be bad for the rest of the major league for the next few years. Then Wade Miley is more productive than Dallas. He pretty much is Dallas Keuchel light. He's a 80% ground ball guy, finesse. He's a lefty. He's the same guy. So they just, the front office is smarter than everybody. They went and got Marwin Gonzalez and Dallas Keuchel for cheap and just replaced them and bid them fair adieu, and the team just keeps rolling. I don't know. Yeah, we're good. They're very good. They're very good. I don't know.
Patrick, I know it's early. We're only in the middle of May, obviously, but, this team is known to being aggressive during the trade deadline. Do you anticipate, as good as they're playing, though, do you think they're just going to be, hey, we're going to stand pat, we're not going to make a move? Could you see them still make some type of move, maybe a middle reliever, maybe pick up another bat just for the hell of it, just because they can and they want to make sure that there's no way that they're going to lose?
I could see a DH, a bat, a good veteran power bat, or even just to bolster the roster going to the playoffs. They had a deal for Bryce Harper done last year that was approved, and then the ownership denied it, and then they didn't re-sign him. So I still don't understand what happened with that. But if Bryce Harper had shown up in Houston, I think that would have helped their chances against the Red Sox. But Tyler White has been not good, and the DH spot has been the only. Aside from Altuve not hitting that well, the DH is the only hole in the entire lineup. So I could definitely see them getting a veteran bat. Maybe go get Hunter Pence from Texas. Let him come back here. He's been killing it this year. Just somebody like that, and hit you some home runs, and maybe not play a lot, but it gets you some at bats. So I could see that. But I don't know. They don't need to. They don't need to do anything.
Yeah, they're in a great position where they don't have to do anything. They just keep playing just keep going out there and just rolling, just walking onto the field and go, okay, we got this. That's all they really need to do. Right, Patrick?
Exactly. But they know they're better. They're having fun. You're getting the productivity from everybody. You got Robinson Chirinos looking like an MVP. Springer is the MVP. Bregman. They're all, aside from Altuve, everybody is in form. So, it's debilitating to go through that lineup over and over again in a game, and you have to do it. Good luck.
Patrick,
good luck.
Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you making some time. Our apologies for your Rockets coming up short in the playoffs. We can't really, be too critical because, the Pelicans are seeing if they can win the lottery. So,
Luck. Yeah, good luck to the Pelicans. They need to get a new mascot. That thing's terrifying.
We're going to talk more
One
mascot
of the scariest
talk.
Things. It really is that scary, though. So, yeah, get a new mascot.
Patrick McClellan, thanks for coming on, brother.
All right, thank you.
That's Patrick McClellan, co-host of the Lima Time podcast, stand-up comedian. We'll wrap up the second hour here on RP3 and Company. Coming up on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Programming reminder, LSU versus UNO baseball live from Alex Box Stadium can be listened to live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pregame at 6, first pitch at 6:30 tonight. That's right. If you want to check out the Stros versus Tigers, go over to our sister station, KVOL, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, Stros Tigers at 5:30. Coming up, third hour, we'll lead it off with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate, a little LSU talk right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That's the Stadium Sports Network. We led off today's show talking about LSU baseball. They will have their final midweek game for the baseball season tonight there at Alex Box Stadium as they welcome on the Privateers of UNO. LSU is 5-5 versus in-state competition this year, but a win, even though it's a midweek game and they're starting their closer, Devin Fondo, tonight, could be some much-needed momentum heading into the final regular season series this weekend at Alex Box versus Auburn. First pitch tonight is going to be 6:30. Pre-game show starts at 6. You can listen to both of those things live right here on 103.7 The Game. Right now it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and talk a little LSU baseball and more with our good friend from the Baton Rouge Advocate, the sports columnist extraordinaire, the one and only Scott Rabelais. Scott, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Oh, I'm doing much better after that introduction. That was very nice. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, man. So let's get right to it. I watched the series from afar over the weekend, like a lot of folks did there when they went up to Fayetteville. But, Rab, I felt that the way they won the final game to avoid being swept and the way Todd Peterson pitched and the energy level from the team, I hadn't seen that in a long time from LSU this season. It's been a while. Could what occurred in Fayetteville be a turning point for this ball club coming down the stretch into the SEC tournament?
Well, it certainly could. I mean, sometimes it just takes one moment, one game, especially one where you win dramatically. With the home run by DePlantis being the difference in a 3-2 win. They need some kind of spark. Obviously, they lost a series to Ole Miss, a series that could have gone their way. I mean, you know, they have a huge rally in the ninth and in the final game on Sunday, then lost in extra innings, and then got blown out by La Tech, and then come back and lose 2 out of 3 at Arkansas, which is no great sin. A lot of teams lose 2 out of 3 at Arkansas, but they got a game, and if you're going to win a game, you want to win the last one because for sake of momentum and your attitude and. Yeah, trying to regain some confidence. So, it could be a turning point for this team. They've got to embrace it, and they've got to have some more help. I asked Paul Maneri about that yesterday. I said, do you believe in these kind of things? You know, turning points, and yeah, this could be a spark or whatever. And he said, I believe in starting pitching, and I believe we've got to have more of it. It was a very very practical, pragmatic answer. So. Yeah, they've got to get better in that department, or they're not really going anywhere. But for now, to win with what they had, and they did get a good starting effort from Landon Marceau, one of their freshman pitchers, who really looked good. You know, limiting Arkansas to just 2 runs over 5 innings. He's the first LSU pitcher in more than a week to go more starting pitcher to go more than 4 innings. So right now for LSU, these are not enormous achievements, but you're going to take your accomplishments where you can find them the way they've been playing.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate. Rab, despite all of this, and you tweeted this out yesterday, and you make a great point, is that they're still tied for fifth in the SEC overall with 1 week to go with Ole Miss, who owns the tiebreaker because of the head-to-head. But, you know, LSU does finish at home against an Auburn team that is struggling, is below 500 in SEC play, and they still have a legit shot of hosting an NCAA regional if they can finish strong and maybe win a couple of games in the SEC tournament. So I understand expectations are at LSU are sky high, right? And people have felt that the sky is falling with the Ole Miss loss and the Louisiana Tech and all the midweek defeats and the pitching staff being a little bit of a mess. But still, everything is still in front of the Tigers, whether that's with the SEC tournament, hosting a regional, and everything like that. It's not as if this isn't smoke Laval's last year where they're not going to make the postseason.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, they're, in fact, at the moment, most people would project them as a two seed in a regional, meaning they would have to travel, but that's not, like you said, missing the NCAA tournament entirely. Some of the goals are out the window. They can't win the SEC. They can't win the SEC West. They can't be a top eight national seed, but they can still be a team that can host a regional. You figure the SEC is likely to have four national seeds: Arkansas, Miss State, Vanderbilt, and Georgia, and then probably one more regional host site, and that's probably between LSU and Ole Miss. Now, Ole Miss, you'd say, has the upper hand because they beat LSU 2 out of 3, and that will definitely be a factor for the NCAA selection committee. But at the same time, Ole Miss lost 3 in a row, got swept at home by Mississippi State this past weekend, an even worse weekend than LSU. They would like to have won a game. So they dropped into that tie with LSU, as you said, for fifth. And now they have to go on the road to Tennessee while LSU is at home against Auburn. Like LSU's, they got to win this series. They really need to win tonight, and they need to win the series. And like you said, you know, not go one and out in the SEC tournament, because they will be playing on Tuesday, and that's the single elimination part of the tournament before it goes to the double elimination. So if you lose, you're out. If you win one game, you're at least playing two more. So with an opportunity to win, you know, even to win one of those two, or go farther, of course, but win one of those two, that you're going to help your cause. So they can somehow get to 31 wins right now. I think sometimes they can get to like 36 wins or so. They can be a regional host. They're going to be tight, but they're going to be the Knicks. One thing they got going for them is they have 17 top 50 victories, which is like fifth most in the country. So that's a very good mark for LSU. In that terms of, they've played a very difficult schedule, and as compared to a lot of the teams there who they're competing with for one of those last regional host spots.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Rab, how good was it to see Todd Peterson go out there and not only pitch good, but pitch almost great and do it with a lot of energy, a lot of fire? He seemed to pump up his team. How good was it seeing that performance from Todd, who's, look, there's been stretches where Paul and his staff haven't even went to him because they probably don't trust him. Have him have a great performance like he did, but also, could he be that fired up voice in the locker room that a lot of people feel is missing from this LSU team?
Well, you know, Todd's an interesting character. He's the guy who last year had the pinch hit double in the SEC tournament. When we convinced Maneri, you know, that he'd hit, and he said, "I haven't hit since high school," you know, or you know, even then, you know, I don't hit. But he's a fighter. Maneri said, you know, whenever I ask him to pitch, he just said, "Just give me the ball," and he's going to go out there and throw. And he gave him those 4 innings and didn't pitch the whole weekend. Who has been very shaky out of the bullpen. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he reacts tonight, because they're just giving him some work. It's not to change the dynamic of what they're doing. But you've got Zach Hess, who's, of course, out of the bullpen now, and that's a controversial decision, but they've moved him, and they've decided to stay with it. And then Peterson, if he can come on and give them, you know, that middle relief or long relief help. things are starting to look a little brighter for LSU in regards to their pitching. And I think you can get Fontenot to have a confidence-building outing. You know, they don't expect him to go six innings tonight. But, you know, if you can give him, like, you know, three good innings or so, then that would be good for his confidence as well. They got Marceau pitching. You know, they hope to have Jaden Hill throw a full bullpen tomorrow and maybe have him back, not this weekend, but maybe to pitch some in the SEC tournament. And then Cole Henry, still waiting on him. But they've got to get those guys back or they're not going to go very far. But they can. And I want to mention earlier, to remind people, if they host a regional, if they can be a regional host, and they, it means you'll be paired with a top eight national seed. It means you have to go on the road if they win. But national seeds lose every year in the first round of the tournament.
That's correct.
And so if LSU could host a regional and win it, and then someone up is an upset winner on the other side, they could host a super regional. That happens every year. I mean, it's kind of luck of the draw, but it wouldn't be an impossibility.
We're speaking with Scott Rabelais. He's a longtime senior columnist for the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. So who's going to pitch? We know Walker's going to be a go. He's pitched well of late. Landon Marceau's pitched well of late. It's not going to be Mikhail Hilliard again, is it, on Thursday, Scott?
I don't think they know just yet. They're going to. He said he was going to set the rotation after tonight's game. So it could be. It could be. It's not going to be Hess. I mean, they'd love for it to be Jaden Hill or Cole Henry, but that just didn't sound like it's in the cards just yet for them to be a starter. So, yeah, it could be Mikhail Hilliard again, which is obviously not ideal. But Walker looks like he's setting that Saturday role and Marceau in the Sunday role. Or this week, the third of Friday in the Saturday role.
Rab, what do you think this team has to do to kind of, I guess, salvage the season would be the wrong way to frame it. I know LSU fans are angry because the season started off with the expectations of being, you know, preseason ranked number one, number two. It's the 10th anniversary of the last College World Series championship team there at LSU. You've had people obviously call into sports talk radio voicing their displeasure. I feel like Paul Menary's earned the right to keep it going and to be brought back. These programs have lulls. They all do. Is it ideal for the team to be around 500 in SEC play back-to-back years? No, absolutely not. But I don't think the cries for him there being a change is warranted. Your thoughts on that and, you know, the disgruntled fans, which is always the case, but your thoughts on all that?
Look, people have a right to be unhappy with the season because, as you said, right, it started off with these enormous expectations. They had all these great players coming back from last year's team who could have gone pro. They had a number one recruiting class in the country, and just things haven't worked out for them. And I would say about Menary, you can criticize a coaching decision here or there. Like, you brought in Matthew Beck on long relief in Friday's game when Friday's game looked like a lost cause already. And that's a guy who could have helped you in one of the other two games over the course of the weekend. And I question that move. But by and large, the guy's won a national championship in over 1,000 games and is in the college baseball, you know, Hall of Fame or coaches Hall of Fame. It's not, he didn't just you know, come in from, you know, a little league field somewhere. So, you know, Paul Menary is in no trouble. And of course, I understand the speculation is heightened even more because you have a new athletic director in Scott Woodward and people like, oh, you know, he's going to make a change. You know, Ed Orgeron's in great shape. He said Will Wade is his guy for now. Even Nikki Fargus, who's been under a lot of criticism, the women's coach who are missing the NCAA tournament again this year, I think she's certainly got one more year. So Paul Menary is not in any kind of trouble. Now, if you don't host a regional last year, you end up not hosting one this year, and if you end up not hosting one next year, well, let's talk at the end of next year because those are not the standards that LSU baseball is known for. But yeah, I think Paul is in absolutely no trouble this year at all. But at the same time, people are right to be frustrated. Like, LSU has very high standards. It's like I always say, it's like Kentucky basketball and Alabama football. You're supposed to be in the national championship hunt every year, and when you're not, people are going to be upset. But I ask people who want to get rid of Paul Menary to think, who do you get? Who is the next guy? people talk about Jim Schlossnagel, who used to be the coach at Tulane. He's at TCU. Well, they're going to miss the NCAA tournament probably for the second straight year. Coach of Virginia, I can't think of his name off the top of his head, but he's a Mannary protege, won a national championship a few years ago. They may miss the tournament for the second straight year. Kevin O'Sullivan, who you're not going to get at LSU, you know, because he's at Florida, won the national championship against LSU 2 years ago, of course. They're 10-17 in the SEC this year. They've had their struggle. You know, it happens. Teams struggle. Vanderbilt, like the last 3 years combined in the SEC, is only like 4 games over .500, which is about where LSU is the last 2 years. And of course, this year they're going to win the SEC. But, you know, it's it can be a tough sport sometimes, and it's more competitive than ever, much more so than it was in the 90s when Skip Bertman was the coach and was winning, you know, led LSU to 5 national championships in a decade. No one in college baseball is doing that again.
We're on with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Scott, we'll wrap it up with this. Mondo Duplantis. I watched him. I watched him in high school. I reported on him in high school. I'm not surprised that he's dominating at the collegiate level. My question to you is not about his dominance, about his performance, about his star. Is he already on track to become one of the biggest stars on campus, regardless of what sport?
You know, he's brought new attention to track and field at LSU, which has always been good, you know, for years and years at LSU, obviously. But this was their first SEC title, men's outdoor title, since 1990. And, people are wanting to know, how did Mondo do? How did he do at this meet? And they're going to look at him in the NCAA regional and the NCAA championships. Yeah, he really is. I mean, he's a world-class athlete on the collegiate level, you know, broke the NCAA the NCAA pole vaulting record this past weekend in Fayetteville. Not a bad day in Fayetteville Sunday for the Duplantis family. How's that?
No.
Antoine hits the 3-run home run, and he has the NCAA record. So yeah, he's just starting. And I was talking to our Sheldon Nichols, who's covered track for a long time, and I mean, he's a freshman. I said, you know, when are you in your prime as a pole vaulter? He said, oh, you know, you're in your late 20s, really. You know, so he's going to be in the Olympics next year, barring an injury. He's going to be in the Olympics next year for Sweden in Tokyo. He's got the 2024 games, the 2028 games. This guy, if he keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to be a gold medalist. And I'll tell you something, Ray, probably not a lot of people know. LSU has never had an individual track and field gold medalist in the Olympics. They've had a lot of people win, be on relay teams and stuff like that. Lolo Jones was trying to be the first. Of course, people remember her hitting the hurdle in Beijing, right, the second to last hurdle, and she stumbled and fell. They've only had people win like relay titles and things like that. So it's they haven't had one. It's been a very long time. Like maybe like Harden back in like the 1930s. I mean, it's been a really really long time. So he's got a bright future ahead of him. The only thing you're like, I wish he was competing for the United States, you know. But he's got this dual citizenship, and he's right now he's going to be going for Sweden. But he's just a star, man, and right up there with any other star in LSU athletics right now that you can think of.
Rab, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Well, it's going to be a busy week. LSU got a softball regional, baseball. It's heating up again. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. Thanks,
Scott Rabelais, Baton Rouge Advocate, making some time for us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, will Cody overtake the show? Possibly. Stay tuned. Right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor you hire is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana OneCall operates 811 as a public service. And to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
Really glad that you're our friend, and this is a friendship that'll never, ever end.
You said I could take over, Raymond. I think we're going to do it. Yowie, wowie, everybody. We are back, obviously. This is RP3 and Company. We're doing our thing inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And if I'm not mistaken, Raymond, we're also on KKW Channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on good old LUS fiber there. Multiple ways to watch it. And yes, if you're wondering in your car or at your office, I did that without looking at anything.
So I will be replaced by Friday is what will happen.
I'm coming for you, dog.
Cody Schutz.
But no, we have to discuss very briefly. We need to talk about the Firefly Funhouse episode. I believe it was 4 aired last night. And,
episode 4 on Monday Night Raw.
We finally got what we were waiting for from Bray Wyatt. You described it probably the best I've seen so far as a Slipknot mask is probably a good way to go about it.
It looks like one of the more demented.
It's terrifying.
Slipknot mask that have been created, and he's wearing like the new outfit is like a demented carnival barker.
It's like if Pennywise wore black and red almost. Like, you know, Pennywise wears the white and the blue. And
so Bray Wyatt, new look, which I hope is what he's going to wear heading into the ring when he makes his return.
Please.
Is a demented Slipknot mask and an outfit that Pennywise from the new It movie would probably sport. So if you're thinking to yourself, well, Raymond, that sounds absolutely terrifying, you're correct, and I absolutely love it. And it's something interesting and fascinating and different and edgy about WWE, which a lot of times can get stale. And this is nothing. This is
no, not stale at all.
Now, he's not stale to begin with, Bray Wyatt, but this whole new character and this whole story arc gets me to want to start watching New School Wrestling.
I mean, we laughed and thought, oh, it's great. Yowie wowie. That's hilarious. He said, this video or this episode ends with the most terrifying yowie wowie anyone will ever give. Oh my God, please get better. Oh, and we'd be remiss not to say shout out to Ramblin' Rabbit. Apparently, what's already dead can never die.
That's right.
And you got to go check Bray Wyatt out on Twitter. He gave the answer out to that crazy deal he said where you could go look back through his promos and find some secret message he left for us and stuff. It's crazy. He gave the answer to that on Twitter as well. You can check that
tremendous audience interaction, giving people like a treasure hunt. It's a demented character. It's a children's show. It's everything that the WWE hasn't been for a while.
It hasn't,
and he's got it all in this one shtick. And
I was worried last week. We discussed it. How are they going to go? Is it going to get stale? Is it going to go too long? No. This was the best episode of Firefly Funhouse yet.
Each one gets better.
And so far, they absolutely have gotten better. I don't know where they're going from here. Hopefully, now we can get an in-arena debut somewhere, if not even in a match, just like doing something in the arena live. But and also I want to say, I saw you calling whoever was on the phone. We only had like 2 minutes in this segment. I apologize greatly. I know you love Bray Wyatt too. Or maybe you hate him. I don't know.
Love him. Maybe you hate him. We'll dive deeper on the 20 by 20 podcast about episode. You can listen to it live
later
this week.
Money
in the bank picks. And I would assume that you and the world-famous Clint D will talk about Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins' romance.
Fan fiction abound.
Oh, there
it is.
It's
not fiction anymore.
There it is. Check that out on the 103.7 The Game webpage. When we come back, we'll talk with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios right here in Upper Lafayette, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133-1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. We talked LSU baseball today, Cajuns baseball, Cajuns softball, NBA playoffs, NBA draft lottery. But you know what we haven't got to? We even talked a little wrestling. We haven't got to New Orleans Saints talk. But we're going to remedy that right now as we head out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline and bring on our next guest. He joins us every Tuesday morning. He's the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It's our good friend, Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Andrew, rookie minicamp is in the books. You really can't get a lot of information from there. You're talking about guys, rookies just working out in shells. They're not even going against vets. It's not, you know, it's not even really a scrimmage atmosphere. But, you know, it is the first opportunity many of us get to see these guys up close and personal and get to see them donning the, you know, the gold and black. Your thoughts, your takeaways from Saints rookie minicamp this past weekend?
Well, I thought it was interesting just to see some of the names. You know, obviously once they go through that exercise, there's always a handful of players that they sign. In this case, a few veterans, one guy in particular that I studied several years ago in the draft pretty closely, defensive tackle Sylvester Williams. He is basically, I would say, labeled as a first-round bust. And he's bounced around the league and, you know, hasn't really amounted to much in his professional career, but he's a guy that's done it. So it's not a big surprise that he would go up against undrafted rookies and get a roster spot. But it's interesting nonetheless because he's a guy that has a lot of potential. And when you look at solidifying the defensive line, they also add Grissom, who is a draft pick from the Patriots. He's a defensive end. So, you know, I don't know that those guys necessarily end up making the team, but those are interesting signings just in that it bolsters the competition. The five-year vet, Michael Burton, who was with the Lions. So those are kind of the three veterans that the Saints signed from the rookie camp. They also add a few more undrafted rookies. And so now they're close to 90. By my count, they're, depending on who they've cut and who you add. I mean, according to their website, I think they're 87. I think there's two more players I don't see on there yet. So I think their roster's pretty complete, about 87, 89 players. And, yeah, I think it's pretty set at this point. I mean, you still can't rule out a June 1st add-on, maybe a veteran. There's still a number of free agents that played with the Saints last year that are still out there. So, you know, there starts to become a question of, would they think about bringing back a Dez Bryant or Michael Omanaunui or Josh Larivius or Manti Te'o? So there are some players still out there, and we'll wait to see what transpires with them. But in the interim, I feel like this roster feels pretty good.
We're on with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, are the New Orleans Saints trying to keep the fullback position a viable option in the NFL while other teams are disbanding it, essentially?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think, you know, the fullback certainly doesn't have a prominent role in the offense, but there are occasions and situations where they will absolutely use a fullback. And Zach Line was that player last year. You know, Michael Burton's an interesting signing because he's been in the league and he's done it. And so, he will compete with Zach Line for a roster spot. Usually they keep one. You know, I think the fullback kind of has two responsibilities. I think the Saints like to give them a role on special teams to help a little bit there, specifically in kick return blocking and maybe punt blocking. You know, obviously on offense, you're really looking at maybe playing 20 or 30% of the snaps at most. Certainly, third and one has been, we've seen over the last few years, has been that fullback dive is absolutely in the playbook and something that the Saints will use. But, you know, I think there will always be a place for it because unless the Saints can find a tight end that can kind of duel as an H-back and block in the I formation, there's going to be times where the Saints want to run it out of the I. So I think there will always be a place for that position in this offense. It's just limited in the number of snaps that player would see.
We're speaking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARTCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, what did you make of the signing of wide receiver Cyril Grayson Jr.? He's the Kenner native. who was a football and track star at Archbishop Rummel. But more importantly, he went on to LSU on a track scholarship where he became a four-time NCAA champion and a seven-time All-American. He's bounced around the league for a while, practice squad guy, camp guy. What'd you think of that signing, and do you think there's a spot on this team for him?
You know, I found that interesting. I mean, it's a cool story, and I think any time you get a local guy, and obviously his speed is insane. And I think one thing that you've noticed from some of these guys that they've signed, you know, the guys that had speed, and ultimately speed is something that can differentiate you in the NFL. They went for guys like that. And so, you know, that obviously if you have speed, you have potential. And then from there, it's how you put it all together. But I'll be watching him. I mean, certainly again, he's local. So, it's a cool story. And, obviously, just being an LSU track superstar, but I think it's going to be hard for him, if I'm being honest, to crack this roster. I mean, you've got maybe not a lot of receivers that are superstars, but certainly guys that have shown that they can do it in the NFL, whether it's Tre'Quan Smith, Cam Meredith, Keith Kirkwood, Ted Ginn. So, I mean, even you look at Trayvon Dural, who also went to LSU. I mean, he's a guy that, by all accounts, was having a phenomenal camp last year until he broke his leg. So, you know, he's back again and is going to be trying to make this team. You've also got Austin Carr. So I think it's going to be an uphill battle for Cyril Grayson. I think really where he can show his speed and his athleticism would be on returns. And now Marcus Sherrills is a guy that they've signed this offseason to really be their punt returner. But if Grayson can show that he's got that ability on special teams, that's where maybe he could crack this roster. Otherwise, I think maybe his best shot would be on as a practice squad guy.
Andrew, what about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson? I know he turned some heads during the camp, got an interception, had a tip ball. He's a fourth-round pick, but a lot of people say that he should have been drafted far higher, that his grade was far higher. He's a versatile defensive back. Is this a guy that could make an impact actually in the secondary this year and just not on special teams?
I think so. Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, he's an interesting prospect. He's a little bit of a tweener. You know, I think maybe the reason he fell is that, you know, the old adage that he's a jack of all trades, master of none kind of guy. So I don't know that he would ever be a superstar in any one role. But when you have a guy that's on the field defensively and he can kind of do whatever you need him to regardless of the play call, that is a really valuable thing. You know, it kind of reminds me of Scott Shanley, and I know some Saints fans cringe when they hear the name Scott Shanley, but Scott Shanley was one of those players where, you know, every year they would bring in Dan Morgan, they would bring in a different free agent, and they would try to replace him. But every year he seemed to continue to not only make the roster but start for the team, and I think it's one of those things where he's a player you could trust, and regardless of the play call, he may not be a superstar in coverage. He may not be a superstar in run support. He may not be a superstar blitzer. But regardless of what you ask him to do, regardless of the play call, he's going to be where he's supposed to be, and he's going to play pretty well. So, and that's how I kind of think of Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I don't know that he will be an elite player for the Saints, but he's a guy that you're comfortable having on the field because whether you change to a zone or go man-to-man, ask him to blitz, ask him to cover the slot, ask him to be the high safety. He can kind of do all those things. And I think in general, coaches love players that have flexibility. So I absolutely think this is a guy that could play. And, you know, I think I said this either last week or 2 weeks ago when I was speaking with you, but on the composite ranking, he was actually higher than Eric McCoy, the center that the Saints drafted in the second round. And so, that's not to say that he's necessarily a better player, but I think the Saints got a tremendous amount of value with that pick, and I expect to see him on the field this year.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, I want to get your feedback. Sean Payton said recently that the Saints were comfortable in taking a risk on Carl Granderson. He's the former Wyoming defensive end who was projected to be a draft pick but fell out of the draft due to the looming sexual assault investigation. He's been charged with one count of third-degree sexual assault and another count of sexual battery. He's pled not guilty to those charges, and the jury trial begins in July. And the Saints, a apparently were very comfortable because not only did they sign him after the draft, they handed out the highest guaranteed base salary of $70,000 and a signing bonus of $15,000 to him. What'd you think of Sean Payton's remarks that they felt comfortable with everything that they knew and signing the young man to a deal?
Yeah, I mean, listen, if he's found guilty at this trial and, you know, either he goes to jail or evidence comes out that it's clear that how the Saints felt was wrong, then it's a pretty simple solution. You cut the player. And, you talk about the investment and the money that they gave him, but in the grand scheme of things, when you talk about the contracts that are out there, it's peanuts. And so he's an undrafted rookie. And he gets a little guaranteed money, but at the end of the day, you know, it's not much against the cap. And so, you know, I don't know other than what you've just mentioned, which I've seen myself, I don't know the details of the case. And so I'm not going to rush to judgment one way or another. I mean, certainly as a general rule, you don't want players like that in your locker room. And I think it's fair to say that. But we don't know the details of this case, and he may be innocent. And so, obviously, we're in a country in a system where you're innocent until proven guilty. And so I think this is everything that transpired with him is the reason why he was not drafted. Now, when it comes to undrafted rookies, I just think it's a very low investment. I mean, you remember other players that maybe had checkered backgrounds, whether it was Chris Ivory, Kyrie Robinson. The Saints took very low investment risk on those players, and then they panned out. And they end up making the team, and they ended up being productive players for the Saints. So, you know, this goes one of two ways. Either Granderson has his head on straight, can put this behind him and lead a positive life moving forward, make the team, and be a productive player on the Saints. Or, you know, this or something else can manifest itself, and the Saints can get rid of him pretty quickly. So I think anytime you have a promising player, I think it's worth a look. We'll see how it goes from here. But certainly, you know, that's one to keep an eye on because obviously that's something that could be going away pretty quickly.
Andrew, we'll wrap it up with this. We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. You know, they make the big free agent move with Jarrett Cook in the offseason, bringing him in, the pass-catching tight end from the Oakland Raiders. I know there's been a lot of talk that the base is already there, that they're going to use a lot of the playbook that they used to use with Jimmy Graham and how they used to target him. My question to you is there any concern there? Because towards the end, it felt like Drew targeted Jimmy a little too much, where it was always the offense ran through Jimmy Graham, and even though they put up big yardage, they didn't put up wins because defenses ended up making the adjustment. Any concern that they're going to be using the same type of playbook that they did with Jimmy Graham, or not?
Not too much, because I think very clearly the primary playmakers in this offense are Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. And I think that will continue to be the case. And if I had to guess, I still think these will be the top two at the end of the year, barring injury. If you look at the statistics, those will be the top two pass catchers on the team. So I don't really view him as coming in and becoming a 100. I mean, that's what Jimmy Graham was. I mean, almost a 100 catch player. I think his best season, he had 98 catches. So, I don't really see Jared Cook having that kind of usage. And I don't. Maybe there will be some wrinkles. Maybe they will use some plays that they like for getting the ball to Jimmy Graham. But ultimately, I don't really see that as how they use Jared Cook now. If you remember Ben Watson the first time he was with the Saints, so I'm not talking about last season where he was kind of banged up at times and just didn't really seem like his old self, but the first time he was with the Saints after Jimmy Graham left, that first year that he was with the Saints, he had over 70 catches, over 800 yards, and six touchdowns that season. And to me, that's how they're going to use him. So the way Jared Cook plays, it reminds me a lot of a younger Ben Watson. He has the speed. He has the ability at the second level, once he makes that catch, when he's one-on-one with the safety, to run him over and get extra yards after the catch. He's got the ability to get down the seam. He's got a long catch radius. And so you look at the chemistry that Breeze had with Ben Watson that season, and Watson was highly productive in this offense. Now, he wasn't the top receiver on the team, but he was absolutely a playmaker. And so I would say Jimmy Graham is maybe not a fair comparison. I think, if anything, Michael Thomas is being used more as the Jimmy Graham in this offense at this point. But I absolutely think Ben Watson, and I think that was 2015, when he had that big season with the Saints. But that's kind of the vision I think they have for Jared Cook. He's not one of these players that, you know, is on third and three is going to catch a four-yard pass and kind of out-muscle a player for the ball. He's a guy that operates out of the slot and can hurt you. You know, turn a 7-yard hook route into a 15-yard gain because he breaks a tackle. And sometimes he can turn those plays into 35-yard gains. And so that's the kind of player he is, and that's what Watson was doing for the Saints in 2015. So I think that's the vision.
Andrew, as always, we appreciate you breaking it down. Let the people know when they can check out the latest podcast and what you're going to be covering, brother.
Yeah, thanks. So we actually just finished a podcast last night, hour-long show, so you can check that out. It's on the internet now. We're at the Saints Happy Hour Podcast. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're on Twitter. So you just search Saints Happy Hour Podcast. You can find us there. But we also do shows daily, so absolutely check us out for all your Saints news. We're kind of covering everything that just transpired with Saints minicamp, these most recent signings. And as we get into the offseason, we'll start to dive into the roster and see if there's any holes. And I think at the end of the day, Raymond, this is a really promising season. Let's not forget the Saints were one of the best rosters in the NFL last year. Not much has changed. I mean, you lose Mark Ingram, but overall, I feel like this team is poised to make another run at the Super Bowl. So it's going to be an exciting year.
Andrew, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
That sounds great. Thanks, Raymond.
That's our friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour Podcast joining us here on RP3 and Company, courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. When we come back, we'll put a bow on it. Another tremendous show in the books right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That's the Stadium Sports Network. I want to thank all of our guests that made time for us today. I want to thank Patrick McClellan from the Lima Time Time podcast, breaking down some Houston Astros and Houston Rockets for us. I want to give a thanks to Scott Rabelais, longtime sports columnist for the Baton Rouge Advocate, talking LSU baseball with us. And, of course, Andrew Juge, who we just wrapped up our conversation with, discussing New Orleans Saints. He is of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Once again, started off the show, and we'll end the show this way. LSU baseball has an opportunity to hear to end the season strong and to build up some momentum for the SEC tournament. Things got away from them. They had 5 straight losses, many of those in embarrassing fashion. But they showed something. They showed some fire in the belly. They showed some heart. They showed some grit by getting that win on Saturday to avoid the sweep at the hands of Arkansas. They're still a top 25 ranked program. If they win tonight versus UNO, and take 2 or 3 or possibly sweep Auburn to wrap up the regular season this weekend at Xbox Stadium, win a couple games in the SEC tournament, they could host an NCAA regional. So everything is still in front of them. But they will need to take care of business tonight at Xbox Stadium. Just a reminder, the good brother, Ben Love, host of Bumper to Bumper Sports, is going to be hosting from 4 to 6. He's going to take you to LSU pregame, which starts at 6 o'clock. First pitch from Xbox Stadium, UNO Privateers at the LSU Tigers will be at 6:30. You can listen to that live and local right here on 103.7 The Game. Y'all be safe out there today. Coming up next, the debut of Chip Shots with Rob Spires right here on 103.7 The Game.